Welcome to the AVA Journal Legal Rebels podcast, where we talk to men and women who are remaking the legal profession, changing the way the law is practiced, and setting standards that will guide us into the future.
In November, when OpenAI unleashed the newest, most advanced version of its chatbot, ChatGPT, it immediately captured the imagination. As we've covered on this show, ChatGPT represents a major leap forward for generative AI in that it can converse with and respond to users in a natural, almost human-like way. And so far, it's been a hit. ChatGPT boasts over 100 million active monthly users after only 2 months, making it one of the fastest-growing applications ever. On March 14th, OpenAI unveiled GPT-4, a more advanced version of the AI language model that was unveiled in November. Meanwhile, others have quickly entered the field, as Google announced its own advanced chatbot, Bard, last month, while several former OpenAI engineers have announced Claude. The arms race in the advanced chatbot field has begun. Some lawyers and law professionals have seen the potential for advanced chatbots to help supplement their work, allowing them to perform tasks more efficiently and quickly. One such area is legal research. In that vein, Casetext launched CoCounsel earlier this month. CoCounsel does not utilize the commercially available ChatGPT. Instead, their customized model was developed in partnership with OpenAI and trained on the latest version of its GPT large language model, which means GPT-4, as well as Casetext's proprietary legal database and search system. CoCounsel functions as a legal assistant, helping users draft all sorts of legal documents. Users can utilize CoCounsel to help draft briefs, compose research memos, draw up contracts and analyze them, and even write correspondence, all by typing their questions or requests into a prompt. My name is Victor Lee, and I'm Assistant Managing Editor for the ABA Journal. Joining me on today's episode of the Legal Rebels podcast is Jake Heller, CEO and co-founder of Casetext. He, Pablo Arredondo, and Laura Safdie co-founded Casetext in 2013 and were named Legal Rebels in 2017. Jake joins us today to talk about CoCounsel, as well as the potential of advanced chatbots to change the legal industry. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thanks, and happy to be here.
Yeah, and actually, before we start, you told me about your child just being born. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's exciting. A lot launching here at the Heller household.
So let's talk about, your second more important product as of late. But first, tell me a little about yourself. How did you get into the legal field and what drew you to the tech side of it?
So I grew up in Silicon Valley, and when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a coder. I spent nights and weekends, even in middle school, high school, et cetera, building websites, building applications. And early on, I also fell in love with law and policy and ended up down a path towards law school. And I had the amazing opportunity to go to Stanford Law School, to clerk at the appeals court level, to work in government, to work for a great law firm. And while I was doing all of that, and while I found a real passion for law, I still very much was drawn to building stuff and really enjoyed coding and would still do that in my spare time, despite trying to build, 2,500 hours a year or whatever. And one thing that really stuck out to me when I was practicing was almost every single thing that I had to do, whether it be document review or legal research, writing things for litigation, even a decade ago, I saw where AI technologies and similar technologies were headed. And as a consumer of those technologies, using technologies like the iPhone or Google, I knew that we can be doing a lot better for lawyers. And I felt held back by the tech I was using in my law firm practice. And I felt like I was unable to do as good of a job as I wanted to or needed to do for my clients. We started Casetext a decade ago, even the technology as nascent as it was then, with the idea that we could apply some of this new and then cutting edge technology to really benefit the legal profession and legal professionals, and have been working on that ever since.
Was there like a specific eureka moment for you? Like, was there something that, either like a memo that you did or something that you saw at your firm where it just kind of like lit the bulb over your head, so to speak? Or was it just a lot of things that you saw and experienced that made you think, okay, there must be a better way of doing this?
It was definitely a lot of things slowly creeping up, but there were a few moments where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is taking so long. For one of my clients, I remember having this classic conversation with our law librarian at the firm where they said, Jake, you just spent in one evening $3,600 of the client's money trying to research this topic. And all I was trying to do is answer a very kind of specific legal research question to help them with a very particular matter. And not knowing that I'd stepped outside the bounds of Westlaw's or LexisNexis's, I forget which, one of their, you know, research products, all of a sudden I was costing the client an arm and a leg. And I remember thinking, all this information is public somewhere. This has got to be cheaper. And this is a totally unacceptable situation. And by the way, I didn't sleep. So I paid $3,600 to not sleep, to barely find what I was looking for. And more broadly speaking, if you're a technology-oriented person and you spend much time working in the legal profession, you just see inefficiencies everywhere. And you see, oh my gosh, this thing that took me 12 hours could have been 12 minutes had we been applying X technology from Google or Y technology from open source or whatever it is. And that slow creeping feeling of just feeling like we could be doing so much better as a profession just kept on hitting me over the head over and over and over again, and eventually put me in a place where I was like, you know what, I got to start something and do something about this.
Is there something about the legal research field that kind of makes it resistant to embracing new technology? Because when I was in law school, internet's already pretty prevalent at that point. And I think at that point, you know, Lexis and Westlaw were still available on CD, but they were just starting to get a foothold on the web and whatnot. But we were always told, you know, you still want to check the books. You still want to make sure you have the books ready in case, you know, the technology misses something or something goes wrong or blah, blah, blah. That way you're covered. And, you know, I think we had to do like memos where we only use books and not use the internet at all. And this is, you know, early 2000s. So, I mean, is there something about, and even though, you know, the legal research field has, you know, has grown by leaps and bounds since then and utilizing technology and whatnot, is there something about technology that makes it more resistant or more suspicious for practitioners?
It's really interesting. I will say, taking a step back, even outside of legal research, generally speaking, I think there's this feeling or this meme that lawyers are kind of backwards with technology. And there are absolutely examples of that being the case. I've definitely seen that, right? And some of the things you mentioned, you know, even when I went to law school, a little bit after you, same idea. When we were on the law review, we would have to hand check every single citation in a book format just in case the online version was wrong. That's crazy, you know? I mean, it's just really, really conservative. But I think actually those are the exception and not the rule. What I've actually seen is that lawyers, when they see great technology and when they understand how it can fundamentally change their practice or their business, they are really willing to give it a shot, try it in practice, and in many cases, implement it for the benefit of their clients. We're seeing that right now with CoCounsel. This technology is relatively new. I mean, as you mentioned, GPT-4 was literally announced an hour before we started recording this podcast, right? And that's the technology that we built CoCounsel on top of. But we'll be announcing over the coming weeks some really major and established large law firm institutions, as well as dozens of smaller firms and nonprofits already using the product. So I think what you're really seeing in most cases is not lawyers being conservative or unnecessarily conservative. I think they're waiting for products that are really, really good. And it's actually really hard to make a product that makes an impact on the profession in a substantial way. We've been working on this for a decade, right? You know, but once you have it and once lawyers can see, oh my gosh, this can potentially enable me to serve more clients when I had to turn people away or review more documents as part of a due diligence process that otherwise would just be totally in the dark about or what have you. And they see that kind of impact and it clicks for them and they're among some of the fastest adopters of technology when the technology makes sense.
So we'll talk more about CoCounsel, but first let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
If you're like me, you're probably a bit frustrated with the state of our political system today. Democracy Decoded, a podcast by Campaign Legal Center, examines our government and discusses innovative ideas that could lead to a stronger, more transparent, accountable, and inclusive democracy. Listen at democracydecoded.org to their new season, which takes a deep dive into democracy at the state and local level by highlighting different ways to ensure that every voter's voice is heard.
Delegate out those tasks that take up your time. Staffy can help you with your legal, administrative, marketing, and even client-facing workload. Hiring Staffy's top-notch bilingual virtual staff means Staffy does the recruiting, hiring, and training for you. Then, if you need a change, Staffy handles it. You get to concentrate on your strategic work. Schedule a free consultation at staffy.cc. That's STAFI.cc and get $500 off with code HAPPY24.
And we're back. So obviously, we're here to talk about CoCounsel, and you talked a little bit about it earlier. So how long has this been in development? You said a decade?
So we've been working on CaseText for about a decade. And as you noted at the beginning of the show, CaseText really began focused around legal research. But CoCounsel is much bigger than legal research. CoCounsel is an AI legal assistant that can, as you noted, do legal research for you, yes, but also review documents, review contracts, draft the first draft of certain documents, put together summaries of documents, and much else, right? So this product in particular is new for us. We just announced it about 2 weeks ago and are rolling it out right now to dozens of clients, but that's relatively new. We've been working in the general field that, you know, these chatbots and other AI systems, this field called large language models, for about the last 5 years. But CoCounsel is a product and building on top of GPT-4, we've been working on the better part of the last year. So in that sense, it's relatively new given the history of the company.
Gotcha. So you knew that chat capabilities were about to improve dramatically in order to make this kind of product a reality. I mean, at what point did you know for sure, okay, this is coming and this is going to happen, so we better get on it?
About a day after getting access to an earlier version of GPT-4, it was really obvious that this model was a transformative moment for legal professionals. Very early on, working with a team at OpenAI, we started playing with it, and immediately we're seeing that it had capabilities that earlier versions of even their models were just unable to do, around reasoning, understanding extremely difficult legal concepts and information, parsing through contracts, being able to accurately answer the contents of what was inside a document. I remember one of the first tests we ran, my co-founder Pablo pulled up a fake email that he created, and it went something like this. It was like, "To Sally from Jennifer, I would love to get privileged advice from the star of Law and Order. It'd be such a privilege to get attorney client, you know, advice from that, from him. He's such a stud, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And the idea is that to make it seem like it's the most privileged email in the world to any older algorithm, but for a nuanced algorithm to really understand language to say, "Hey, there's no privilege here whatsoever." Right. So we asked the model, is this document attorney client privilege? It said, "No, why would it be? It's just about a person admiring a TV star." As where every single previous algorithm looking at that exact same email would say, "Well, it has the word privilege and attorney-client all over it. Of course it's privileged." Right. And that kind of nuanced understanding of language was something that really blew us away. Something that said to us, oh my gosh, this is something that really for the first time ever, we're seeing an AI that has a really deep and intelligent understanding of what's going on in this document and many, many others like that. So we were just kind of blown away with it pretty immediately.
Well, I'm sure it's not the first time that like someone from Law & Order was asked actual legal advice or
asked. Yeah, exactly. Would not be the first time for sure. You know, Victor, one other thing to say here, which is that you're using the term chatbots, which I get it because ChatGPT was the really exciting, you know, moment, I would say, where people woke up to how great this technology is. But to say something a little controversial here, I actually think the most exciting application of this technology is not chat. I think the most exciting application of this technology is taking a technology that can read, write, and understand at a postgraduate level, which is where we're at right now, and turn it on to questions that aren't just about chatting with or talking to the system, but instead even more basic things like, is this document responsive to a request, right? Classic discovery or due diligence or document review. Does this contract contain the following provisions? If, you know, so-and-so party did X, Y, and Z, would that violate the contract? Tell me if this case as part of research is actually relevant to the request, and if so, why? These aren't necessarily chat questions. These are more, you know, general artificial intelligence questions that one might pose to an artificial intelligence system. And again, what we've seen here that absolutely blew us away is this system does really, really well at all those tasks. So to us, part of why we decided to build CoCounsel is this goes way beyond just chatting with it and into situations where you can review millions of documents in a night and get world-class responses in terms of accuracy and precision and recall. And that's what really blew us away.
Gotcha. So it's almost like having another lawyer in there with you, but that one that can, like, you know, comb through all this data, you know, at an exponentially faster pace than any human could.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why we're calling it an AI legal assistant. We kind of imagine CoCounsel to be that additional pair of hands that you're going to just turn on to combing through all that data, or go, you ask it to go research a question for you. It'll read hundreds of cases and prepare a memo for you in the course of 2 minutes. And that kind of power to have your own assistant there doing all that work for you, we think really will enable lawyers and legal professionals to do a lot more with a lot less.
So when I spoke with you guys a few years ago, I guess you had just introduced Kara, which was an AI legal research tool that could scan documents and then returns all kinds of citations and authorities and things like that to help lawyers then draft responses or whatnot. So, I mean, obviously just, going through with what you said earlier, but how much of a leap is CoCounsel from what you guys did in Kara?
I think it is such a phenomenal leap. Yeah, I don't remember the exact quote, but somebody once said, you're always embarrassed of your earlier works. And by comparison to what we're capable of doing with the AI of today, Kara, which by the way is only like 5-year-old technology, is child's play, frankly. Because what the AI was in the past was AI that was good at doing a single task, a single narrow task pretty well. So the narrow task that we designed our AI to do for Kara was to read through a brief, pull out all the citations, understand what's going on with the brief, and then do new research for you to find the new cases to read in addition to those citations. A supremely useful tool used by more than half of the Am Law 200 and was copied subsequently by Westlaw, LexisNexis, and Bloomberg, right? Brief analysis became just a part of the legal research fabric. We're really proud of that. But we're in a totally different ballgame now. We're now at a place where AI can read, write, and understand at such a high level that it can do many tasks. First of all, not just one task that you've trained it for, but many tasks, and do them all at a world-class level, at a level that is scary, scary good. And that to us is a huge inflection point in terms of the utility for AI and its application to legal practice.
Gotcha. So if I'm a lawyer out there, or if I'm, like a legal professional or intern or whatever, and I'm listening to this, or I'm following the news and whatnot, and I'm intrigued by this technology, but I'm not really sure how to approach it or how to properly utilize it. Let's say if I had to draft a research memo about some point of law, how would I go about using CoCounsel to help me do that?
So for CoCounsel in particular, the way you'd engage it is you'd open up CoCounsel, and you can do two things with CoCounsel. You can just kind of chat with it, in which case it'll feel a lot like ChatGPT, but that's not how we'd recommend you'd approach this problem. For this problem in particular, you would engage in one of CoCounsel's many skills. CoCounsel's skills are kind of pre-programmed capabilities within CoCounsel that lets it engage in these kinds of tasks like writing a legal research memo. So for the legal research skill, what you do is you click on the legal research memo skill, you'd put in your own kind of language your research request, and it can include the facts of your case, it can include the jurisdiction that you're filing in, the kinds of cases you're looking for, really whatever, basically in the same language you might give it to a colleague or to an associate or to a paralegal to kick off a research request, and you hit go. And after that, what it will do behind the scenes for you over the course of about a minute and a half to 2 minutes is it will take your request and turn that into dozens of different research queries that it will use to research against our daily updating database of cases, statutes, rules, and regulations. And it will execute those queries and read through all of the results. So it will start reading through hundreds of cases and statutes and regulations, et cetera. It will then take its understanding of all of the materials that it read to start drafting you a memo and finish with its 1 to 5 paragraph essay answering your original question, all within the course of about 90 seconds. So that's how you use it. It's pretty darn simple to use, but it's incredibly powerful in terms of the output you get.
And a big thing about just ChatGPT and other kind of language models and whatnot that I've seen is just, and just what people have said about it is that obviously there's a danger against, coming up with wrong information or inaccurate information or things like that. So how would you suggest the user, who's using CoCounsel, how would you suggest that they guard against, like relying on wrong information coming up, or guarding against making sure that the information that they cite is accurate, or is it just based on your database? So therefore it's, the information comes from a database. So you guys have already vetted it.
Yeah, it's more the latter. And it's a really interesting and important distinction. A lot of these chat models, when you're just talking directly to it, the analogy that I have is it's like you're talking to the smartest person you've ever met, who's read every book and every case and everything, right? But that same person you're talking to, you're asking them to answer from memory. And you're also saying to them implicitly, because this is how these models work, you have to answer. You can't say, I don't know. And in that context of just chatting with it, you're going to get sometimes like, hey, what's a case from in the Western District of Kentucky from 2012 that says X, Y, and Z? If you ask it that question, it may answer, but like answering from memory, it may be right and it may be wrong. And of course, in a legal professional setting, that's unusable. You can't use those kind of systems like ChatGPT to do things like research or to analyze information and get an accurate answer every single time. The way we build co-counsel is pretty fundamentally different. When you're working with one of co-counsel's skills, instead of answering based on memory, it is answering based on the documents that you give it or the legal research database that we give it, and it will only answer based on that information. So to kind of go back to that analogy, if you take the smartest person you ever met and you told her, read these 100 cases, and based on these 100 cases and nothing else, answer this question, what is a case from the Western District of Kentucky that says X, Y, and Z? That person would be able to give you a stellar answer really, really quickly because they're so smart and so well-read. And that's exactly how our system works. We are saying to the AI, don't draw from memory. Don't, you know, access your potentially outdated and incorrect, you know, memory banks for this information. Instead, use your incredible capabilities and incredible knowledge and intelligence to read through this information and fashion an answer based on the information you've read. This is a process in the literature, by the way, called retrieval augmented generation. And we have found that the big change with GPT-4, frankly, is that it's able to get the answer on those kinds of questions right 100% of the time. And that to us is a really big inflection point, right? When you can, you know, go away from this real problem that we've seen in the past with AI systems being incorrect and instead based off of real actual materials, that's an absolutely game-changing kind of possibility. And that's why we're launching CoCounsel now as opposed to when GPT-3 came out 3 years ago or when large language models were invented 5 years ago. This is the inflection point, the ability to get these answers right when they're based off of real information that you're putting in front of the model.
Before we continue, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. So you had started talking about GPT-4 and the advances that this program has made compared to previous iterations. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, what is it about GPT-4 that makes it such a major advance from, you know, GPT 3.5 or 3?
In short, it's just way smarter. It is better at logic and reasoning, right? There are all kinds of games that people are put on Twitter that seem to trip up ChatGPT. I kept on putting those examples in GPT-4 and it falls for none of those. It is a much better reader. So it's able to read through really, really complex like merger and acquisition agreements, through really difficult terms inside of terms of use or terms of service, through cases that deal with super difficult topics and understand it all at a postgraduate level. And based on both of those, the ability to kind of infer and the ability to understand, you're talking about a machine that all of a sudden that you can point it at, you know, thousands or millions of documents and as only a machine can, it can read through all of that in superhuman speeds. And that's what got us, you know, super, super excited. Compared to GPT 3.5, which itself is a major advancement. I mean, to give you some context, you know, one of our studies that is actually part of the GPT-4 announcement showed that GPT-4 can pass the bar at the 90th percentile. GPT 3.5 was at the 10th percentile, right? So we're talking about a massive leap in reading, understanding, logic, and question answering capabilities. And it's just about it getting smarter and more capable. That puts it in a position where, as were before, it was not something you can give, you know, in a legal professional setting to somebody and kind of rely on the output. And now we believe you can.
I think that's probably higher than what I did on the bar exam, but
definitely higher than what I did.
But hey, well, whatever. We both passed, right? So, yep. So we've talked a lot about what this technology can do. What are some things that it can't do, or what are some things that it doesn't do as well? But that maybe it's working on.
It's a great question, and like all technology, it has its limitations. At a very high level, I would say that it is, again, reading, writing, understanding at postgraduate level, but it is not mistake free or error free. And the times where we've seen in our kind of beta test that we did for the last 6 months or so with our clients, the times I've seen it get the worst answers is when, especially when the question posed was potentially vague or ambiguous, it's definitely not going to understand what you mean every single time. So directing it with extreme specificity and treating it almost like a junior player on the team that needs a lot of like clear direction, but then we'll do a very good job in the clear direction, we found to be sometimes necessary to get the right results. It's also funny because it's this thing that can brilliantly understand like a very complex contract, for example, but then you ask it to add two numbers from the contract to get a total deal amount, and it's not great at math. And so we had to develop kind of simpler systems that aren't even AI to supplement the insane intelligence of this reading and writing technology, which is GPT-4, just to make it good at very, very basic arithmetic, division, you know, subtraction, et cetera, which is kind of a funny, you know, it's an AI that can do so much, but it can't do that yet. And finally, you know, what I will say is, especially when you're dealing with really complex documents or really kind of hidden meanings, there will be times, like with a human, where it just might fly over its head, right? And you can see that, for example, in document review contexts where there's some super hidden meaning in some sort of document that even a human might miss, then I wouldn't necessarily expect GPT-4 to pick up on that either. Although I will say it's really blown us away sometimes where it's very obvious if somebody's talking in code and it flags that as something that is potentially important to review. So, and maybe very last thing here, it is not funny. It can barely tell a joke. It's funnier than GPT 3.5, but one of the things that you'll see when you're working with it does have its limitations. And I think maybe humor is a true sign of intelligence. And this thing is not funny. So, you know, it's interesting because it can do things for you. Like when you're chatting with it, like come up with great analogies to put in your brief. Right, I always lacked for analogies. My co-founder, Pablo, is really gifted at this. But I always lacked for great analogies to use when trying to make a persuasive case or an argument. It is really good at coming up with analogies, but it's just not funny yet.
So it can't do math. It's not funny. So, I mean, I guess one could argue that it's already pretty consistent with a lot of people in the legal industry, right?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think about it that way, but that's exactly right.
So let's talk about sort of, you know, the reaction to this kind of technology. Because obviously, whenever something like this comes out, there's always going to be people that are afraid of it or people that, you know, fear the worst. Or, you know, I mean, there was that big New York Times story about like that chatbot that turned into a possessive stalker on somebody.
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, people that watch too many sci-fi movies like Terminator and whatnot, there's always that, you know, it was a HAL from 2001. Obviously, those are just extreme examples, but there is, you know, concern from people, you know, that, you know, about this technology, like as we've seen with like unauthorized practice of law and things like that. So what do you think are sort of the dangers of this technology? And like, what are some of the fears that you know, you might have about something like this?
Taking a step back, I think that there are a lot of fears and a lot of concerns, and a lot of them are have their place rooted in something valid. And I think that it takes real kind of responsibility and intelligence to navigate this next phase to make sure that everything that we do ends up, you know, for the better of the profession and for the better of the people working on it. And, you know, I'm happy to kind of dive through some of the things that we've seen and heard already and how we're addressing it. But I think this will be an evolving point or evolving issue. On the issue of unlicensed practice of law, our answer here is we think this technology best serves lawyers and gives them information, gives them the capability to make a better decision, puts them in the right kind of position to better advocate for their clients. But we don't think it's ready yet to put directly in the hands of consumers and offer great legal advice yet. For a lot of the reasons you mentioned earlier, like if you're just chatting with it, it may give the wrong answer. I was just chatting with a different chatbot from Anthropic earlier today, and I asked it what the statute of limitations for murder in Texas was. And the answer is there's no statute of limitations, but it said it's 5 years, right? So I think that if a consumer was chatting with these applications, they might be seriously mistaken about the, you know, true legal advice and would put you in a position to make a potentially bad decision. So I do think that it's, you know, the way you deal with these UPL issues, which I think are real, is you make sure this is a tool that supplements what lawyers do. And in that regard, I think it is really, really, really well positioned to do that. Do this. That's why we're positioning our product as an AI legal assistant. We believe this is an assistant, you know, that assists lawyers and puts them in a position to make great decisions based on the right information. You know, I think some people are worried about whether or not AI will take people's jobs. And I will say the technology is insanely impressive. And when you're dealing with it, almost everybody's first reaction is, oh my God, I used to spend hours doing this and I just did that in minutes. Oh my God, right? And especially for a profession that bills by the hour, that's a bit of an uncomfortable feeling at first, right? What we've seen so far, even from our beta customers, and what I believe will be the case going forward, is that it just empowers lawyers to do more for their clients, to go deeper on the topics and issues that they know they want to go deeper on, to offload some of the lower value work to an AI so that they can do the most high value stuff. And in fact, the legal profession, and you've been covering this, you know, for years now, right? The legal profession has gone through so many shifts that have made it more effective, more efficient. We used to research just in libraries, and now you can do that online with a click of a button. We used to write snail mail. Now it's email, right? More recently, we've introduced Zoom depositions instead of sometimes traveling 8 hours just to do a deposition. We've becoming more and more and more effective and efficient as a profession for decades now. And there are more lawyers than there ever have been, and we're making more money than we ever have. And I think that's because each time some manual, slow, and unnecessarily complex or difficult process was made more efficient by technology, we as lawyers have found ways to support people better and do more for them and increase the value of our work. I think that trend continues. And I think this will accelerate that trend, actually, like hyper-accelerate, because this technology is generational. It is an absolute inflection point. And I think everybody who interacts with GPT-4 will see what we're seeing, which is this is a bigger technology shift than everything else that's mentioned before. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be massive. But at the same time, I don't think it's going to be massive in a sense that'll be bad for lawyers. I think it empowers them and will let them do much, much more.
And so to wrap up, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do so?
Check us out on casetext.com. And I'm also like the most reachable founder in the world. I'm Jake at casetext.com. Or you can tweet at Jacob Heller, because at Jake was taken. and happy to talk anytime. Love to talk about this stuff. I love to think about this stuff. Love to hear feedback or criticisms. It's all part of the process.
Right. Thanks for joining us today, Jake. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Really fun talking.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please go to your favorite app and check out some other titles from Legal Talk Network. In the meantime, I'm Victor Lee, and I'll see you next time on the ABA Journal Legal Rebels podcast.
If you'd like more information about today's show, please visit LegalRebels.com, LegalTalkNetwork.com, subscribe via iTunes and RSS, find both the ABA Journal and Legal Talk Network on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, or download the free apps from ABA Journal and Legal Talk Network in Google Play and iTunes. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Legal Talk Network, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.